Let's turn to Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10, we're going to start in verse 24. Hey, Cohen. Matthew chapter 10, we're going to start in verse 24. And if you want to write down in your Bibles, write down in your notes, it's already in your Bible. Write down Luke chapter 12, verses 1 through 13. That's a companion verse that you can go back and look at later. But today we're just pretty much going to stay in Matthew chapter 10, verses 24 through 33. but really, I'll start reading in verse 5 in just a moment. We have really gotten a lot of great, great feedback on this Red Letter series. And, you know, sometimes you think, let's plan to do this, but you really don't know how it's going to go. But this is one of those times when I think people, you've responded so well to this, and it's just so meant so much to you to talk about the words of Jesus and not just about things He did. And I just wanted to tell you personally how much I think that means to Richard and the elders, that there's just been such a great response to it. And I want to thank you for that, because that's been very meaningful. Jesus is sending out the 12 on their first limited commission. This is the first time they went out together as a group without Him. And He gives them these instructions, starting in verse 5 of Luke chapter, Matthew chapter 10. Matthew 10, starting in verse 5. Did I say Luke? Sorry. Do not go among the Gentiles or enter any town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. As you go, preach this message: the kingdom of heaven is near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. Do not take along any gold or silver or copper in your belts. Take no belt for the journey or extra tunic or sandals or a staff, for the worker is worth his keep. Whatever town or village you enter, search for some worthy person there and stay at his house until you leave. As you enter the home, give it your greeting. If the home is deserving, let your peace rest on it. If it is not, let your peace return to you. So Jesus is sending the apostles out, the 12 out, on their first trip without Him to preach about the kingdom of heaven. It's a very limited commission. Okay, He tells them where to go. He tells them what message they are to preach. He tells them that part of their activity will be serving others. And He even tells them some financial considerations. You know, some practical things about how to do it. And so it's at this point, they're probably thinking, man, this is going to be cool. We know where to go. We know what to say. We know how our expenditures will be taken care of. And this is going to be really a lot of fun. I think we're going to enjoy this. And then He brings up the number one problem that they will face, starting in verse 14. If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, shake the dust off your feet when you leave that home or town. I tell you the truth, it will be more tolerable for Sodom or Gomorrah on that day of judgment than for that town. Pause. I am sending you out like sheep among wolves. Therefore, be as shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves. And all of a sudden, they start kind of looking around. And they think, wait a minute. Sheep among wolves? That doesn't sound so good to me. What does that mean? Sheep among wolves? And I'm getting the impression that He's referring to us as the sheep. What do you think, John? Sounds like it to me. Peter? Be on your guard against men. They will hand you over to the local councils and flog you in their synagogues. And all of a sudden, everybody goes, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hold on just a minute. This wasn't what happened to being welcomed and financial. What happened to all that? What's this thing about being flogged in their synagogues? And now all of a sudden, if you're one of the apostles, has the picture changed drastically for you in just a matter of a few moments? Okay. The number one problem that they were going to face, and Jesus brought it up from the get-go, was that people are not going to like you. I know this sounds like a really cool adventure you're going on. I know it sounds like a really neat thing, but let me just tell you up front, people are not going to like you. In fact, they're just not going to not like you. They're going to hate you. And they're going to do some things to you that you could never have dreamed of. But I want you to be aware of that before you go. This morning I want to talk about the fear of men. And about what Jesus said about being afraid of other people and what they might do to us. This, I think, is a common issue that everybody feels on one level or another. I've heard people say from time to time, well, I really don't care what people think about me. I think if you'd lie about that, you'd lie about other things as well. We all care about what people think about us. We just do it on different, it's just degrees, not kind. Right? A husband who says that and goes home and tells his wife, I really don't care about what you think about me or what the children think about me, is either stupid or delusional. Because we do care what people think about us. Now, some of us care a lot. I'm at that end of the scale where I care a lot about what people think about me. Some of us are down here at the other end of the scale where we do care about what people think about us, but it doesn't affect us or bother us as much. But we still do care. You know, if we're married and we have children, we care about what other people think about us if it's just our wife and our children. So it's a matter of degree, not kind. Does everybody understand that? So this isn't a time for you to tune out and think, well, I really don't care what people think about me. Yes, you do. You may not be in touch with that, but you really do on some degree. Okay. Basically, I am a chicken at heart. That's why I'm wearing a pink shirt today. I'm a sissy. No. I am basically a chicken at heart. I am the guy who is, when he is in the casket, will hope everyone likes the way he's dressed. I'm that guy. You know, I'm very concerned about that sort of thing. That's how I grew up. That's how my mother was. That's how my father was. And that's how the way I am. Now, I've changed in a lot of that, but I still feel that way very strongly. Some of you grew up and you didn't care anything about that sort of stuff. But you still feel certain things about how people feel about you and how they look at you. What do we fear from others? We fear that people won't like us. We feel that people may betray us. We are afraid that people will gossip about us. We're afraid that people will make fun of us behind our backs. And we're afraid that through what others say, we may lose our good name in some way, especially as we get to be adults. We fear that. That somebody might say something to us at work or behind our backs at work, that we might lose our good name or that we might get in trouble with someone who's a supervisor or manager. We've all felt those things, right? Okay, so in this verse, I think Jesus really addresses that issue with them, with the apostles. Verse 17, be on your guard and listen to some of the things he says. Verse 14, he says that some people will not welcome you into their homes. Verse 17, some people will flog you in their synagogues. Okay. Verse 19, but when they arrest you, notice he said they're not if they arrest you, but when they arrest you. People not liking you is a matter of when, not if. You might want to write that down. People not liking me is a question of when, not if. It's kind of like your teenage child never having a wreck in their car. It's a matter of when, not if. It's going to happen. Okay? And you're going to be disliked. Okay? Look down at verse 21. Brother will betray brother to death. And a father's child. Children rebel against their parents and have them put to death. Betrayal. That's another form of being disliked. Verse 22. All men will hate you because of me. Hatred. I know in the South, we don't think anybody's supposed to do that, right? You're supposed to like everybody. You're supposed to be nice. But people will really hate you. There is somebody in this world, I guarantee you, who hates you. I guarantee you there's somebody in this world who hates you. Now, I don't, but there's somebody that does. Verse 23, he says, when you are persecuted, flee to one place, flee to another. That's another form of dislike, being persecuted. Now, we're not persecuted on the level that some people are in the world, for sure. We can still be persecuted living in the South, going to our church, doing what we do. We can still be persecuted for it. It's just a different degree. Now, I don't think it's comparison to what they did in the first century or to what happens in some place of the world today. But we are still persecuted. It's just a matter of degree, not kind. Verse 25. Jesus said, if the head of the house has been called Beelzebub, how much more the members of his household? You be called, although you're going to church and trying to be like Jesus, people still will call you satanic. They still will think that you're doing something that Satan would approve of, not what God would approve of. And that's, isn't that odd? But that happens. That we do certain things that people assume that what we're doing is from the devil. It could not be from God. We preach baptism is essential for the salvation of sins. There's a lot of people think that is satanic. That God would never say that. If we preach that the road to heaven is narrow and the road to hell is broad, a lot of people think that is from Satan. God certainly would not save just a few. Even though He said He would, that wasn't what He meant. That is satanic. Okay? So, these are all the things that these guys will have to face, that they have to be afraid of. And these are all the things that I think we're afraid of. We're afraid of persecution. We're afraid of being disliked. We're afraid of being accused of not being with God. We're afraid of being betrayed. All these things are things that we fear, and He brings it out to them. Now, how did He tell them to deal with it? I think that's the question. How do I react to that? Not is it going to happen, it's when. What is going to be my reaction to it is what's critical. And He tells them how to deal with it. Let's start in verse 26. And then verse 28, and then verse 31. So do not be afraid of them. Verse 28. Do not be afraid of those. Verse 31. So don't be afraid. Now that's what we would expect Jesus to say, wouldn't it? Isn't it? We would expect Him to say, don't be afraid of people. Easier said than done, right? Shake your head like this. You know, shake your head like this. Much easier said than done. Oh, I'm not afraid of anybody. I bet you are. I bet money you are. You're afraid of somebody. You're afraid of something that somebody could do to you or to your family. There's somebody that causes you to be afraid. And that's why Jesus, He just laid it out there. He didn't say, you know, there's something wrong with you being afraid of people. He said, just don't be afraid of them. Now, I was trying to think what was the best way to express this. And something happened on the way to work, on the way to church this morning. But I want to ask you a question first of all. I want you to go back in your mind, if you can close your eyes and do this and not go to sleep. Some of you don't try it because you'll go to sleep. I want you to think back maybe 5 or 10 years ago, if you're capable, of someone that you were afraid of, that was a threat to you. Maybe on the job, maybe when you were in school, maybe when in your neighborhood, someone that you felt was a threat to you. Okay? Does everybody have that person in mind? Try? Everybody try? Okay? Now, I want you to think, are they a threat to you today? Are they still a threat to you? Some say yes. Some are going, no, not really. At the time, did they feel like they were a big threat to you? But now, time has removed the power of their threat, hasn't it? For some of us. Okay? I went to my high school reunion back, oh, it's 10 years ago. Yikes. Went to my high school reunion 10 years ago, and the guy who bullied me from 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th grade was there. His name is Dick Vaughn. I hope he's not your cousin. But he was there. And I said, hey, Dick, how's it going? And he didn't hardly remember who I was, you know. But as I talked to him a little bit and then watched him interact with people in the reunion, I noticed that he was no different than what he had been when he was 17 years old. Hadn't grown up a bit. Surly, mean, attitude, hadn't changed at all. And I thought, wow, you know, of all the people, I'm not more mature. I'm more mature than this guy, you know. And it just made me realize when I was thinking about this class, and we had, Christy and I had talked this week about bullies because of, not that she bullies me, but we talked about bullies this week because of that little boy that died, committed suicide. And it made me realize, you know, that Dick Vaughn hasn't had power over me since I was probably 16 years old. But at the time, I was very afraid of him. And I think that's one of the things Jesus wants us to realize is that we don't need to be afraid of people because their power over us is very limited. But Satan makes it out to be like it's a big stinking deal. He makes bullies out bigger than what they are. And you don't need to be bullied by anybody or threatened by anybody. Because Satan may stand out to be much bigger than who they are. It was kind of like Goliath. All the Israelite soldiers have been watching him for weeks come up there and yell all that stuff, you know, and make all those threats. They were terrified by him. David comes up, and he's not as big to David as he is to them. Although David was probably smaller than all of them, he wasn't as big to David as he was to those guys. And I think it'd be a good idea for you, someone you're afraid of, I think you ought to get some outside help. I don't mean professional help, but you need to get somebody to give you a healthy evaluation of that person's real power over you. Because they would probably say, it's not as big as you think it is. Don't be afraid. And then the second thing Jesus says is verse 32. He says, and this is really interesting. He says, whoever acknowledges me before men, I will also acknowledge to him before my Father in heaven. How they are to react. First of all, do not be afraid of me. Do not be afraid. Secondly, acknowledge me. The word there for acknowledge means to speak openly about something based on a deep conviction of facts. To speak openly about something, whatever it may be, not necessarily anything religious. But the Greek word means to speak openly about a subject or an issue or a person based on a deep conviction of facts. And the thing I've discovered in my life is if I truly believe in something or a situation or a person, then no matter what anybody says about that, I'm not very threatened by how they feel about it. You ever notice that? The other night, my little dog Wilbur got sick. And so he was like all balled up on the floor, and I thought he was dying. He got up to walk and staggering. We thought he'd had a stroke. And so we got him in the car. If y'all ever seen a dog that's had a stroke, it's real, it's scary. So we got him in the car, rushed him down to the emergency animal hospital down there on Mount Industrial, and took him in. We get him out of the car, he seems to be fine. And then he goes out and just regurgitates something. We weren't sure what it was. And he is, almost said sick as a dog, but that wouldn't be. But he is. He's pretty sick. So we go inside, and while Christy's talking with the lady about getting him in and getting him back to the emergency care facility back there, getting, you know, you have to do the same thing that you have to do at Gwinnett Hospital. You got to sign all your documents, and you know, it's the same thing. I'm sitting on the floor with him, on the floor, on the dirty floor with him, trying, holding him, trying to get him to calm down and not feel so bad. I didn't care who walked in the door, what they said, what they saw, what they thought. It did not matter to me if anybody liked that or not. If the people there, I didn't care. Because what was I concerned about? Him. And it's just, you do that with your children, don't you? You know, if your children get sick and throw up somewhere out in public, you don't start apologizing to the people around you and shushing your child and say, please don't throw up in public, that's not nice. You're concerned about that child's health, and you don't care what anybody thinks, do you? And it's the same way, I think, what Jesus is saying here. He's saying, you know, if we'll just stay focused on what matters the most to us, what we feel our deepest convictions about, who cares what anybody thinks? And I think what we get thinking about so many times, I know I do this, is I get thinking so many times about what other people think that it kind of clouds up my convictions. But once my, you know, convictions kind of come back around and get in the right spot, then I just don't care what anybody thinks. And so Jesus says, acknowledge me. Just keep acknowledging me. Keep getting, staying on what matters the most. Okay? Verses 34 through 39, he talks about, we need to hurry up here. He talks about, do not suppose I've come to bring, you know, bring peace to the earth. I'm not come to bring peace, but a sword. And, you know, the whole thing about a man will turn a father against a child and, you know, all that. And he says all that. And I think one of the things he's saying here is that we need to accept the inevitable. And the inevitable is people are not going to like us. I think that's the biggest jump that some of us need to make, because we're convinced that everybody will like us. I think that is a lie from Satan. I'm going to tell you right now what I think that is. I think the statement, everybody, if you will do your best, everybody will like you, is a tool of Satan. So I know your grandmama may have told you that. I'm not saying she's Satan's spokesperson, but I think that's Satan's tool. And it's Satan's tool, particularly in the South. I'm dead serious about this. It's Satan's tool to stop Southern disciples from being all that we can be for Him. Jesus said, everybody will not like you, in all probability. In fact, Jesus said, everybody speaks well of you, beware. Remember that? He said just the opposite. When everybody does speak well of you, beware. Now, I don't mean we need to purposely go out and antagonize people and be stupid. But we need to realize that it is inevitable that people dislike us. Over in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8, just write it down. You can go back and look at it later. Jesus said, or Peter said, do not be surprised, you know, at the painful trial that some of you are going through. Is that 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8? I don't think that's right. It's in 1 Peter. We'll get a reading on that later. But it's in 1 Peter. He says, don't be surprised at the painful trial. I think it's 1 Peter chapter 1. Don't be surprised at the painful trial that some of you are going through. They were as surprised as we are when people didn't like them. But he said, just don't be surprised by that. Accept the inevitable. Number four. Look in verses 40 through 42. He who receives you receives me, and he who receives me receives the one who sent me. Anyone who receives a prophet because he is a prophet, will receive a prophet's reward. And anyone who receives a righteous man, because he's a righteous man, will receive a righteous man's reward. And if anyone gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones, because he is my disciple, I tell you the truth, he will certainly not lose his reward. Now we're thinking, what in the world has that got to do with what was going on before? I think Jesus is talking about here about our responsibilities and how we need to focus on them. He's talking about the responsibility of receiving people, the responsibility of being a prophet, the responsibility of receiving righteous people, the responsibility of giving out cups of cold water. And Jesus is saying, those are the things you focus on. Being righteous, being like a prophet, accepting the righteous, accepting prophets, giving out cups of cold water. Focus on those things. And you'll be okay. It kind of ties back in what we talked about before about about just keep doing the right thing. And if you're doing the right thing, then what other people think about it seems to dissipate the importance of it. And I thought about this week. Let me tell you what happened to my class this week. Really, it happened week before last. I've been training this class up in Kennesaw. I know this will shock some of you, but I have bumped heads once or twice with my manager. And it's shocking, huh? I can't believe that. Yeah, we've kind of bumped heads a couple times after class. She thought something ought to be done a certain way, and I thought it ought to be done the other way. I'm not opinionated usually, but I was this time. Yeah, I was a little opinionated, you know. And so we just kind of knocked heads a few times, more than any other trainer has with her. Okay? So there were various times that I thought when she would come in and talk to me after class that she was going to be telling me, why don't you just turn in your books and go and go home and we'll send you your paycheck in the mail. You know, now what is really cool is that of all that, the other day she said, will you come back and train another time? Starting next Monday, not this Monday, but the next Monday. So I was shocked because I thought, I can't believe after all the times we knocked heads that you want me to come back. But she does. She must just like knocking heads with somebody, I guess. I guess she enjoys that. But, you know, I was talking to Christy about it, and I said, you know, I said, because my other nature took over, I wanted her to like me. I really wanted her to accept me. But that wasn't going to happen, okay? And so I was talking to Christy about it, and I said, here's, you know, this is what happened, blah, blah. And Christy said, well, let me ask you this. She said, are you treating your class the way Jesus would treat them? And I thought for a moment and I said, you know, I really believe I am. And she said, well, then what are you worried about? And, you know, that really crystallized my thinking about something. And it ties in with this verse right here. That if you're really acting like Jesus, and you're treating people like Jesus, then if I'm passing that litmus test, right? Everybody know what the litmus test is? If I'm passing that litmus test, then it really doesn't matter about all the other things that people are looking down and saying about me. As long as I know in my heart, and someone who's wiser than me will verify that to me, that I'm treating people like Jesus and I'm doing what Jesus would do, that pretty much I pass the litmus test for God. And so I don't have to really be concerned so much about how other people feel. And so since that originally happened, a couple other times it's come up again. We've met out in the hallway and we've knocked heads about something else, you know. And every time I walked away thinking, did I act like Jesus with her? Yes, I did. Have I'm treating my class like Jesus? Yes, I am. Am I preparing for my classes the way Jesus would? Yes, I am. Then everything's okay. And so I think that's what he's saying here, that if you keep handing out cups of cold water like I want you to, everything's cool. Everything's cool. Don't worry about it. The rest will take care of itself. The power of that person will go away as long as you're doing what I want you to do. I want you to write down another verse, and we don't have time to look at it. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 1 through 5. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 1 through 5. talking about the approval of God as opposed to the approval of human courts and even our conscience. We don't have time to talk about that this morning, but I want you to look at that later on. And I want to tell you a quick story and then I'll be through. You know, sometimes God really puts things in your way because He wants you to see something. You ever notice that? That you're really thinking about something and wondering and something's going over in your head and all of a sudden God just gives you this little thing and you go, wow. So this morning I'm thinking about this on the way to church and other things are going on that I'm having to think about, and I'm just kind of like all over the place in my thinking and wondering about stuff. And I come up to where Cruz Road, you know where the club apartments are, where the golf course is over on one side of the road, and everybody stopped. The traffic stopped. I'm thinking, I don't see anything. I think, what's going on? And this is two mother geese, have got seven little gooselings, I guess they're called, goslings, and they're walking them across the road. Traffic is at all these humongous cars and SUVs are at a dead stop. And those mother geese are not saying, hurry up, there's no telling what they'll think about us if we don't get across the road. They are casually walking across the road. One's in the front, one's got two or three behind her, then another one's in the middle getting the rest of them across. Didn't know, didn't care about what the rest of us thought. And I thought, that is a picture to me from God, is the way I want to be. No matter how big it is, no matter how dangerous they appear to be, if I will take care of my own and focus on my mission, getting people across the road, then who cares what anybody else thinks or does?